there are reasons why they're not, but we need to work to make sure that they are as accurate as possible. I'm proud to be at CDC. I am proud to have colleagues like these people. Ruth is a physician who works in AIDS clinics. Peter works in an AIDS clinic. Bert, I'm not sure if you do, but and Mary, I think many of you know her history. If anybody will keep us honest, Mary will. She's an activist. She doesn't wear her flag, but she is. And Jacob, you know. I'm sure that there are a lot of things that we could have done better, but at least let us start with an understanding that there isn't homophobia and sexism. It may be part of the culture that we come from that makes it impossible to escape, but at least I feel good that at CDC I'm surrounded by people who work their butts off trying to do everything we can to prevent new HIV infection, and to the extent that it's our mission at CDC, which is limited, to make sure that people with HIV infection have access to care. You've raised an awful lot of questions, and I'm not entirely sure where to start. By the way, let me just say that Tony Novello is certainly interested in this issue. She spoke at a conference that we had on drugs and HIV infection.
She's speaking at the United Nations.
She's also speaking at the United Nations, and I've had a chance to look at the draft of her speeches. I think it's excellent. And she is committed. She's taken this on as one of her own personal interests. She, in fact, the point I was going to make is that at the speech she made at our conference on drugs and HIV infection, that is, drug abuse and HIV infection this past Wednesday, was that just one of the points you made. Women do have a right to have children. Having said that, let me ask Ruth to make any comments you want to make. The process of AIDS case surveillance has been an evolutionary one. It did start out with gay men. It began before there was a laboratory test to diagnose HIV infection. And for historical reasons, there are some imperfections in the way the AIDS case surveillance came about. If we were creating it de novo, knowing what we know today, it probably would have some things differently in it. Its purpose is an epidemiological tool to track the course of the epidemic, and it has proved, despite its flaws, and we recognize there are flaws, we recognize there are people who die without diagnosis. We are doing a study in New York City morgue to find out how many people are dying with AIDS or HIV infection that are not recognized. We can tell by looking at some of the graphs that Ruth and her colleagues have put out that there are increases in some diseases, pneumonia, for example, that aren't recognized as AIDS that undoubtedly result from HIV infection. We want our AIDS case surveillance to capture everybody with HIV infection. But its utility as an epidemiologic tool is based primarily on its capturing the most severe manifestations of HIV infection. But to be maximally useful as an epidemiological tool, obviously it should include everybody.
Could I just ask you something? When you say most severe, what do you mean by that?
Ruth, do you want to, or Peter, do you want to comment on that?
I will. I kind of like to back up a minute, though, and say that what I see is that HIV-infected women are often poor, they're often women of color, they often have no access to primary health care, that they're often the care provider, they're either taking care of children or taking care of someone else in the family, and that I think HIV-infected women need care. And I think that goes beyond whatever we call severe or less severe than that. AIDS is the leading cause of death in black women in New Jersey and the state. It has been for 4 years. AIDS is coming up as a leading cause of death, and this is in young adult women. Mm-hmm. And young adult women across the United States is going to be one of the top five in the country here. And I have, and I think many of us really have tried to work to show that the impact on women is here. But it's not, we're missing it. We've got to attack it. And I agree with you on that. We talk about the AIDS case surveillance. Frankly, first of all, I don't restrict myself to that database. I'll use any data I can get a hold of. And looking at different causes of mortality, I'm pulling on vital statistics, which is not confined to AIDS surveillance. It's HIV infection or AIDS. We've also looked at other causes of death that are increasing in women. This is what Gary was talking about, including pneumonia, including sepsis, including unknown causes of death in areas where there's a high incidence of HIV infection. Now, it may not be on the death certificate, but we think it's related. And I think it's important that we begin, that we really look at things. I think Gary's right when he says, you're not really as far apart from us as where we want to go as one observing my new thing. In terms of the AIDS surveillance definition, it was developed to track serious morbidity and mortality. And how serious morbidity was defined, it often was, were people hospitalized, were they dying of the condition? And it, at the early part, it was the constellation of symptoms. We didn't even know it was HIV infection. We didn't know what caused it. But we were trying to estimate two real basic things. One was to estimate the number of people severely affected by it. How do you define severe? Hospitalizations, life-threatening. Yeah, everyone would probably come up with somewhat different meaning for that. But the other was also to track the epidemic and to watch where it's gone. What are the trends? Is it going up in the heterosexual population? Is it plateauing among homosexual men? By the way, it is not plateauing among homosexual men in this country.
Could I ask why you haven't answered all the research? Or there have been like articles, you know, in the newspaper saying it is plateauing. It says the rate is decreasing.
There is a trend toward a plateau in the major metropolitan areas, but across the country it is not.
Okay, but you know, that appears nowhere. I have not seen someone from the CDC being interviewed by, in any one of those articles saying, excuse me, this is incorrect. I have not seen that. I've seen plenty of articles, but I have not seen one person from here respond to that. I just want to lay that out.
The
because
reporters have to want to report that as well.
But if you read it, if you're, I do certain kinds of work that has to do with something totally different. If I read a newspaper article that incorrectly represents that stuff, I call up, okay? Mm-hmm. And as the primary government agency that's responsible for tracking this epidemic, if you know that, and a reporter in the New York Times puts out an article saying that it's plateauing, I would assume that someone here does PR, follows. But I didn't mean to get off track. I just want to say that that is something that
try. We, in fact, called a newspaper reporter this morning and told them there were three errors in a particular article they had just written about women. So we try. We don't get it all. But you're right. I mean, I don't think it's coming out that strongly. We also, we try along that. We need to try harder. When you change the case definition, and we changed it in 87, we did a much better job of capturing women. Not perfect, not great, but better when we changed it. Proportionally, a lot more women, IV drug users, people of color came in. And we were very glad about that. On the other hand, it did decrease our ability to track the trends, and it decreased our ability to do projections. And you just got to know there is an interplay there with science. That it, when you suddenly jolt that trend, people, for example, whether or not the large proportion of IV drug users that we have today was also there in 84, we really don't know. But I think we needed to do it, and we're glad we did it. And we'll do it again if we think we're going to be including a large number of severely ill people. One thing about women dying without a diagnosis, women back in 1985 were twice as likely to die the same month they were diagnosed as men. And this, to me, points that doctors weren't recognizing it early on. And it points to an issue of early recognition by the clinicians. And the surveillance system is dependent on the medical care system. And if the medical care system isn't working, if people aren't being HIV tested, if they're not getting diagnosed, that's a problem. Kings County, there was a report that 40% more people would have met the AIDS case definition out of Kings County. Had this a problem with the case definition or a problem of the medical care system? I mean, I thought of issues here. There's also the issues of the diseases that are not captured by the case definition, that aren't in there. And mentioned the gynecologic conditions. There's a lot more information coming in on those. I want to deal, the spectrum of disease study was set up to look at illnesses not captured by the AIDS case definition. Vaginal thrush should be reported through that. We are getting cases through there, so I'm surprised at what I heard, and I will look into whether there's a site that is not, but I'll look into that. 7% issue, we've just looked at our first cut, and you're correct. There are too few women, too few relative women. We're actually getting a lot of women, but 7% was, to us, not what we want. And we have asked every site to concentrate and put as their high priority bringing in women, IV drug users, and people of color into this. And if they cannot keep up with enrolling people, these are the ones there to enroll first. And we're carrying forward with that next year as well when we talk about renewal. So I agree with the concern of what we're doing. I think one thing about not publishing, you know, capturing the original diagnosis and not knowing later on. We have another study that started where we are looking in several areas with what we call it the National Death Index Study. The people who are reported to us with AIDS, we are in these areas going back and getting their death certificate, and we're finding out why they died. And I think that will help us with finding out what their other diagnosis. I'm going to let you address the survey.
Could I just ask you, when you talked about when you changed the definition in 87, it decreased your ability to the trans. I don't understand why that is. Could you talk about maybe why that is and what bearing that has on actually changing the definition again?
When we try to forecast the epidemic and where it's going, say among IV drug users. And we had, but we have something. But you go from 1981 to 1987. We have IV drug users. This is the percent of all patients. What's the case definition? But people are increasingly using the case definition. And we don't know if the proportion of the epidemic that is related to IV drug use is really increasing among IV drug users and going down in homosexuals, or whether this actually, I mean, this was beginning to tip upward even at the end of 87. So it's taking time to figure out how real some of this was. That's all I mean. I mean, we'll be able to do it. We can do it at, you know, 3 years beyond. But when we start talking about changing the case definition, we get a lot of screams from scientists, from the World Health Organization, from other places saying, like Europe, we can't track trends every time we do this. It threw everybody apart for a while. I think that this is the secondary reason, though, for surveillance. And I think the primary one is to capture severe morbidity and mortality related to HIV. So I mention this because I think it's important, but I do think it's secondary to the first one.
Well, I just wanted to tell you something, that in New York City, 35 to 40% of people who are hospitalized who are severely ill enough to be hospitalized do not fit the CDC definition of AIDS. But if morbidity, severe morbidity is the issue, the definition should already have been changed.
Is that because they don't have the diagnostic capabilities?
No, I don't think that we're talking about non-diagnostic. I want to get back to that, you know, I look at the stuff that comes out of the CDC. If I were a healthcare practitioner, we have to start out with that most doctors in this country know nothing about AIDS. Okay, they don't. Most doctors don't know anything about AIDS. So they trust what is written somewhere. And most doctors in this country don't read journals. You can publish anything you want to in a journal, and you know they don't read it. They find out about drugs from a detail salesman. You know, we know how doctors operate. Unless they're unless they're researchers, they don't read journals. And a lot of the researchers don't even have the time to keep up with all the journals unless somebody, you know, they're well-funded enough to have a research assistant who goes through it every month. I mean, I'm a researcher. I know what the story is. So the point is that the information that the CDC is looked to, okay, as the place that puts out this information. If every doctor in the United States got a letter from the CDC that said, these are the conditions, we're changing the CDC definition, and these are the conditions in women, they would see it. You know, it's like the anti-rape hotlines. You know, it's like somebody has to clue someone in that this exists. I mean, I've spoken to women whose doctors never asked them questions about AIDS. I mean, we have all kinds of prejudices going. They're less likely to be asked if they're white and middle class, as if somehow that's going to spare them. So do I know maybe there's a hidden epidemic of white middle class women who have AIDS? Okay, just like the public health system never captures white drug users. You know, they go to the private clinics in Minnesota and get detoxed. They, you know, get their drugs clean somewhere. Okay, this is why we always see women of color, because they are forced to come into contact with the public health system, you know, because they go to public clinics. So this is also why, you know, some gay men never get into your statistics, because no one ever puts AIDS on their death certificate. We all know this. So to me, the reason for changing the statistics, you know, there are such complicated statistical packages in the world, okay, that I can't believe that adding another column is going to be that crucial. Okay, I mean, I know the statistics that exist. That's what I do for my work. Okay, and I'm telling you that the level of complicated statistics that can be done in the world, like proving things on 5 cases, is not to be believed, because I do social science research. Okay, and that cannot be the issue here, because what you're putting out in the HIV surveillance report is basic statistics. It's percentages and numbers. That's what it is. It's nothing sophisticated. Okay, now projections are something else. Okay, I understand that, but you know what? I don't care what the reason is at this point, because not changing the definition is having more impact on the lives of people than worrying about whether your future projections are going to have an impact. If 3 years down the line you find out that that was not true, you can say that was not true. Okay, but right now the question of like pushing people to test and pushing people to contact trace and all that kind of stuff, when you're not giving people the information on which to take care of their own lives or the medical professionals. You know, we all go out and we go to speak to medical professionals, and they have never heard of 3/4 of the things we say if they have not already worked with HIV-positive women. They just haven't heard about it. They don't read the journals. They don't read. It doesn't appear in your surveillance report. It doesn't appear in your classification system. It doesn't appear in the international classification system. I know. I've looked for it all. There's nothing in there. To me, it's like, this is the issue right now. It is that if the CDC changed the definition, every newspaper in the United States would carry it. Okay?
But, again, it gets back to the reasons for changing it. There is a whole spectrum, all the way from supporting anyone with HIV infection with or without symptoms. As you know, I mean, it could be based on CD4 cell counts, it could be based on a whole number of things. But if we did that, we would be laughed out of the country for inflating the epidemic curve and simply trying to bring more money into AIDS research. I mean, there has to be a
rational... We do need to AIDS research and...
Absolutely.
And being laughed at it.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, as scientists, I mean, I don't mind being laughed at, but there has to be a...
It was raised in 87 as to whether we were artificially inflating the epidemic. Clearly, we were not. But
but whether we included less severe in all symptoms of HIV infection is another issue. One of the things in the AIDS case definition as well is that most of these conditions are specific to HIV infection. And many of the diseases that IV drug users are getting, people of color are getting, women are getting, are not specific to HIV, but they are increased and they are exacerbated.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it really raises my blood pressure. I want to know then, and maybe it's just something I don't understand scientifically, but if you have herpes in as a part of the definition, herpes simplex virus, why don't you have also cervical cancer? I don't really think, they're both considered STDs, right? Cervical cancer is considered sexually transmitted as part of the spectrum of sexually transmitted diseases. I'm really not sure why. You know, I'm really not sure why. I know that herpes can get worse in combination with HIV infection. But
I mean, several of the diseases that are listed in the CDC definition right now have caveats on them. Herpes simplex, and also that lasts for more than 1 month. You know, diarrhea that lasts for more than, I mean, there has got to be a way to say that about women. It is scientifically unacceptable that you can make those caveats for a particular group of people and not for another particular group of people. Okay?
I think we need to look at it, but I also think I think there's an issue of gynecologic infections here. There's also an issue of other bacterial infections for women and IV drug users.
Yeah, pneumonia.
It probably is playing a larger role in morbidity from what I can tell. I think that this one still needs to be dealt with, and I still want you to address the cervical cancer.
Now, back to the general gynecologic concerns that raised in focus. The kind of complication is that we're talking about conditions that are very common.
Very common
in all women. There are over 1 million cases of treatment for 1 million women for PI. So that most Americans now have some evidence of a prior infection with human papillomavirus. We have, if you looked at women in this bill, a very substantial percentage of them have candidal vulvovaginitis, some would be something, namely cervical neoplasia. That adds an additional difficulty when we're talking about HIV infection and trying to determine the etiologic relationship between the infection and these other conditions, because so many women that are not HIV infected have them. That raises some concerns, because if you talk about the case definition and have a woman who's infected today that has candidal vulvovaginitis today, and yet would we want to say that she has AIDS?
Well, would you say that if she was treated as one, I'll just give you a case that's real, I can give you probably 100 cases, that she's been treated for this over and over and over and over again, and it doesn't go away, and after a couple of months she starts showing lesions and stuff. Don't you think that there's a way that people tell how common, you know, disorders differentiate when something else is at play? I mean, I think that we have been told over and over again that all women get these things. That's not a good enough answer. Of course, you don't want to raise concern. I mean, but it seems to be so contradictory, okay? On the one hand, you're running out to routine test every woman, okay? Which to me seems like more, raising concern than beyond belief, okay? Like, so every woman should be concerned so much, even if nothing is happening, that she should run to get tested, okay? Especially if she's going to have a kid, okay? But on the other hand, you're telling me that actual infections that are in women that are occurring, they're getting treatment, they're not going away, they're getting worse and worse and worse. We don't want to get people too nervous. So what's the story? I mean, you want to get people nervous enough so that you mandatorily test all of them or routinely test all of them, but you don't want to get them nervous enough so that they can look at their body or a doctor can look at their body and say, this is not responding. If all women get these diseases, then we know what normal is. We know how they all ordinarily get them. We also know what looks different. You don't have to be a genius to know that. I mean, I don't get it. It's a way of dismissing things. It's just like saying, we don't have to take care of this because it's too prevalent. The difference between me getting vaginal thrush without HIV And a woman who's got HIV getting vaginal thrush is like night and day. It's just like night and day. There's no relationship to it, the way that people feel.
I'm not sure I understand that. I mean, I see lots of patients. I work in an STD clinic, and probably the most common thing I see is vaginal thrush.
Right.
And it's very difficult. Sometimes it's mild. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's very severe and very problematic. And I think it's just as problematic for the woman who has... I don't think there's a difference of night and day. In other words, it's a problem for women. So to say it's like night and day for HIV and non-HIV infected women, I don't understand that.
Too many of us are taking care of women with refractory cancer.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's one of the biggest problems I see of women who have
constant
cancer infection, which don't respond to treatment and they're HIV negative.
But we know that there's a correlation between immune suppression, whatever that comes from.
Right. Okay.
We know that immune suppression does fuel, the growth of yeast, candidiasis.
No.
I have autoimmunity as a factor in recurrent vaginal candidosis and minor vestibular gland syndrome. And there are many articles on women who have the immune dysfunction and the growth of.
I want to say one other thing to what you just said.
Well, let me just say one other thing to what you just said. You said, and some of them don't have HIV. The fact is that not every man who has AIDS has herpes. Right. The fact is that some people get some symptoms and some people get others. We all know that HIV disease and AIDS even, that there is no set pattern or symptom. That is the problem that we're running into here. Because one, it gets dismissed because all women have it, and two, because some women who have the severe case are HIV positive and others aren't. And I would say to you that some men who have AIDS have severe herpes, and some men who don't have AIDS have severe herpes. It doesn't seem to matter.
Right.
Okay? The decision still boils down to that somehow in women, that decision cannot be made. Somehow all women have to show the same set of symptoms, or it can't be on that list of symptoms.
Right.
But the list of symptoms itself is not something that all people have to get. It's a set of symptoms. And some people get MAI and some people don't. And some, get thrush men and some don't. And some get PCP and some don't. Okay, we don't require that every single person with HIV get every one of those symptoms. Otherwise, we wouldn't need a list of symptoms. We could have one. We would be sure everyone got it. Mm-hmm. And that would be AIDS. But we have a list because it's a syndrome.
Right, we don't say that HIV negative people can't have these symptoms.
But that is indeed often the case. There are not many of those circumstances where healthy people get PCP, some of the diseases on that list.
I think that's the biggest problem because we're talking about common conditions and non-infected people. That's a real complication. And severe PID, for example, clinically severe PID, serotonin HIV, refractory cannibal, low vaginal diseases, same sort of thing. Focus on that surgical neoplasia. Worked on a meta-analysis with a colleague from another university, many of them are there are 21 reports, all of which find a positive association between HIV and certain. Said that the other conditions were common in the general population. There's some reason to believe they may be more common in HIV-infected women because of similar modes of transmission STD. So you might expect HPV, genital HPV infection, what we don't know is the etiologic relationship between the two. Like, is an HIV positive woman more likely to get it because she's HIV positive, or more likely because of the sexually transmitted infection? So I think there's now substantial evidence to suggest there is an association between HIV. What we don't know is that natural history component that you were talking about, and the etiologic relationship. The influence of HIV on getting CIN, on progression of cervical neoplasia, and progression to invasive cancer, etc. There are one or two reports that suggest that it might be more likely to cause more rapid progression, but that's really from a scientific standpoint, the jury's still out. The association issue, I think, the consistent evidence would argue that there is a positive association. same thing, I would suspect, possibly, with PID, if we're saying that women are more likely to have HIV because it's an STD, PID is caused by STDs, etc. So we're talking about conditions that a lot of HIV-negative women have, but HIV-positive women may be more likely to have because of the common mode of exposure. What we don't know at this point is the relationship between these two biologically, and whether having HIV infection increases the likelihood of clinical severity in these patients. But we do know enough to be getting the information out, as we're doing at this point, to say that HIV-positive women need to be followed for this condition. We need to keep in mind the fact they're at risk for separately screened. I think you've raised some.
So you're putting out recommendations? Or?
Well, we co-authored this meta-analysis. It's just been submitted, and we're working on other documents to address that issue. So I think the clinical care issues are quite important, and we are recognizing and addressing. The impact on the case definition is, again, problematic because so many women have cervical neoplasia. Some have fairly rapidly progressing cervical lesions that appear to be, at least as best we understand it, depending on the HPV sub-DNA subtype, there are two specific types that are more likely to progress than others. We really don't know if HIV-infected women are more likely to have those and the relationship between those and progression for HIV-infected women. So it's difficult at this point, and really impossible on the basis of the data we have now, to say that HIV-infected women are more likely to have more rapid progression. The reasons to entertain that. Theoretical reasons. We know that immunosuppression, when somebody's immunosuppressed, is more likely, for example, in pregnancy, in normal pregnancy, because of the changes that occur. HPV, a single lesion, can, have much more clinically severe course, rapid progression during pregnancy, and we might expect that might happen in an immunocompromised woman. On the other hand, it certainly can happen In the absence of immunocompromise for any reason, including age, raise some key issues, particularly issues along natural history. We don't understand that. We do understand enough to be planning to make a recommendation. That's separate, however, from the case definition issue because of those other problematic issues that we were talking about.
Well, see, I don't see why it's so problematic. I mean, you have part of the case definition, surveillance definition, is with laboratory evidence of HIV and without laboratory evidence of HIV. So, laboratory evidence of HIV, okay? I don't think that we can afford to wait for years for you to do the studies of causal relationship. Nobody waited for years to do those studies for gay men. Nobody did. Nobody did it for children. You know, they sat down people who work with children and they said to them, what's going on? They didn't review the literature. If you sat down doctors who see lots of HIV-positive women, they will tell you what those women are getting, and you should change the definition. And if you need to prove, you know, how quickly or how rapidly, take your time and do it. You know, but right now, it needs to be included. You know, nobody else had to wait. I mean, this is, again, very, very typical. Okay, white men do not have to wait to be included. Everyone else needs proof, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I understand that, you know, people are going to yell at you for changing the definition. You know, I think that if you are in a public position, you have to have a thick skin. You just do. If you think it's right and if you think you can save people's lives, then that's what your job is. You know, and you have to be able to argue with people about that. If you can put out a definition in which you say yourself, in the pediatric definition, we got together these people, we sat them down around the table, and they said this is what they're seeing, why can't you do that for women? Why only for women do you need total causal
right.
proof? Why can't it include conditions that would be there otherwise, except now there's HIV?
Right.
Okay? Those conditions become life-threatening with HIV. They are life-threatening OIs.
Vaginal candidiasis?
It could be. We don't know. We don't know if that's leading to something else. But I'll tell you what could be. I will tell you what is. Okay? PID is. You know, cervical cancer is. Okay? I mean, but even something like vaginal thrush doesn't show up. I have a friend of mine who's had esophageal thrush, okay? And he's going to die because his esophagus is, like, in incredibly bad shape as a result of it, and he's, like, you know, scarring and all this kind of stuff. Come on.
Right.
come on, we don't know what that is, you know? But the point is that we don't need to require more proof of one group than of another group. You have a history of the way that you've created a definition. And that history doesn't have to change and suddenly, you know, adhere to more scientific principles because women are involved or IV drug users are involved.
It didn't in 87.
What?
It didn't in 87.
No. But I'm just saying that, that the fact that you want people to have HIV, all right, so say with laboratory evidence of HIV.
Right.
You know?
What's the big deal? Do you include everyone who's symptomatic HIV infection?
Well, as long as you change what's a symptom.
What's a symptom? Yeah.
Okay, when I read HIV asymptomatic, I read most women. That's what I read when I read HIV asymptomatic. Okay? Because symptomatic means a symptom that you've got written there.
You have to think about
and those symptoms are not written there anywhere.
Why we would want it changed. I mean, why you would want it changed. And I'm sitting here thinking of several things. One, as an educational student, which can be addressed a number of ways, including case definition, but that's one reason I'm hearing. Another reason I'm hearing is disability.
No. I mean, you can say disability. I know that those groups, like HHS has an independent responsibility to determine disability. The problem there is that they look to you for whatever you say. Okay, legally that's not your responsibility, it's HHS's responsibility. It's your leadership role, but it's not your responsibility. Okay,
okay.
To
so
me,
you're aware
I'm totally aware
of separate guidelines recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm totally aware, okay.
Right.
But I mean, the point is that the major point I want to raise is two things. One, you said the educational thing, and the other is the scope of this epidemic. We cannot get people to take seriously the epidemic in women. Okay, unless they appear in your tables. Okay, we cannot get doctors to seriously care unless they see infections that they're seeing. And by the time they're seeing a woman with PCP, she's ready to die. And we know that there are things that they could be seeing before then. And it even extends to the ACTGs. Do you know that there's not been one clinic, there's one. One clinical trials of all the trials that NIAID has done in ACTG ever did a pelvic examination. One. Even though they also have only 7% women.
Right.
Okay. They can't even go back
not
to their they can't even go back to their clinical information. Do you know that it is not part of the NIAID contract to require people on research sites to have a gynecologist on their staff? That they have been looking for male markers in every woman that's ever been in a clinical drug trial. And that goes back to the CDC definition. Lots of drug trials say CDC defined AIDS. Mm-hmm. But more than saying that, it means that when they set up a research team, they do not put a gynecologist on that team. They could be giving a woman a drug and it could be making her gynecological problems worse and they wouldn't even know it because they've never looked inside her body. Because nowhere is there anything published that even suggest that they should be doing that. So it has multiple repercussions.
Exactly, and that also the
yeah, I think there are other ways to address that, such as these guidelines for care of women.
We talked about, for example, like PID being life-threatening, and that's another area where we're addressing now guidelines for PID. The clinical area of PID, we are concerned about that, addressing it. Partly with the education mission in mind, though, one of the concerns is that if you say very common conditions and say that any HIV woman that has AIDS, that has educational implications too, some of which may not be all in the woman's best interest.
For example,
which implies the right.
It implies, sure. Yeah,
well,
they're very late in the course of your illness, even though they may have a CD4 count of 800.
What is the natural history of sexual neoplasia? It's usually very slowly progressing.
Yeah, and depending on the DNA subtype, much of it will not progress, regardless of how it's managed. There are specific subtypes that tend to progress, some rather aggressively in non-infected, HIV-infected women as well, without any, for any known reason.
There are. How many types of
16, 18, 31, there's like 60 types. And, I mean, not all the types have been studied to understand their carcinogenicity. So.
Just incidentally, one of the world's experts on human papillomavirus, Bill Reeves, is here at CDC and has a strong interest in this and is working with our group in Zaire. Is that correct? What's the status of that study? Do you know? Well, unless I'm wrong, there is a study in the Projet CETA in Kinshasa to look at this. Again, this gets back to the issue of the logic of putting it into a case definition. If a person's life expectancy from human papillomavirus infection is not significantly altered with or without HIV infection, what is the rationale for including it?
Well, KS is in the, I mean, come on.
Well, as I've said before,
maybe we should take KS out.
Yeah, that was what I was saying. That's what I meant when I said earlier, if we were redoing it now with what we know, I'm not sure KS or thrush, some of those, they're not life-threatening, and therefore they might not have been in there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, first of all, I have two friends who just died with very ill in KS, so, you know, whether or not you put it in or take it out, you can...
All I'm saying is that,
you know, this is a... I understand the need to talk technically and medically, but I still have not heard a good reason. Okay? You can say to me that, you know, I can give you reasons why someone wouldn't want an AIDS definition. Because it's stigmatizing.
Sure.
I mean, I know you know that the reason you're not getting some people coming in here is because if a woman comes into a clinic and she's already gotten disability payments, and they diagnose her with AIDS, you're not going to find out about it because no one wants her name on your records if she doesn't need it. Okay? This is the way people take care of themselves, you know, and prevent themselves from... No, I'm giving you real-life examples.
But I don't understand how including vaginal candidiasis in the case definition will help them. It will save women. I guess that's the belief I can't get to.
Because if the list of... All right, go ahead.
Well, let me put one thing forward. I think
and then you
a different line on it. But it seems to me that a lot of women, if they... And I think you would probably agree with me before that... If we go to the doctor at all, we go to a gynecologist. Okay? Now, gynecologists know nothing of these symptoms in HIV-positive women. The Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology publishes very little on HIV infection and, for instance, CI men. The information is not out there. If you change the definition, okay, and you begin and you put in PID that's refractory, and you did a, what's it called? What's it called? Sequelae, you know. What they do with herpes.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know what I mean. But you all know what I mean. I can't remember the word.
Severe sequelae?
Yeah.
Not a severe. If you have it for over a month, it doesn't respond to treatment, then it can be considered. Now, that would really change things if you do that with PID in the gynecologist's office, okay? Or in a clinic, in a family planning clinic, an STD clinic. If you did the same thing, if you have HPV, and then 6 months later, the woman comes back for a PAP, and then she gets a class 3, and you go, wait, what's happening? Why is she progressing so quickly? That would raise the awareness of people who women are seeing, okay? Because I think that we know that it's true that as women, who do we go to? You know, our whole lives are like focused on our reproductive organs. I'm not saying that that's right. That bugs me. However, this is the reality of our lives right now, okay? And I would think that it would certainly change the kind of healthcare if women were alerted and said, hey, why am I getting this chronic?
Right, well, that I agree with pelvic inflammatory disease being a life-threatening infection, and I think that's an important issue, but vaginal candidiasis is what I want to know. It's how to save women's lives.
Requisition for something else, such as vaginal warts, I've watched numerous of my friends die, from that. It started with vaginal candidiasis, and then it progressed to vaginal warts, and then later an abnormal pap smear, which turned into cervical cancer, and before I knew it, she was gone. You know, so it's like a prerequisite for progression to AIDS, and yet no one is listening. I understand why you don't get it. You know, I really don't.
Well, one thing that I also, when I look at the list of diseases that are currently, most of those reflect a low immune state, a low cell count, and that has not...
Is there any difference in the disease progression, such as there is with herpes?
Can someone tell me why you care about oral thrush in men?
Okay. Right. And it's not important in
vaginal thrush.
The disease is more severe in HIV-infected men, right?
Oral thrush?
Well, you haven't studied vaginal thrush in HIV-positive women.
So you don't know
how you make that statement.
Right.
Come on.
Precisely.
Tell me.
Well,
the one study that is out on vaginal thrush,
is oral thrush in the case
that no.
No.
So,
yeah.
But the one study that is out on vaginal thrush does say that all the women presented first vaginally, and then it went on, and they went on to progress orally and esophageally. Now, if they had known to maybe treat more aggressively, okay, and this is just my sense also as a lay health worker, to treat more aggressively. In the clinic where I work, and we see HIV-positive women because we're a free clinic, because the AIDS clinic are not giving any GYN care in New York City. Okay, we are treating our HIV-positive clients who have vaginal thrush, and we're treating them with Monistat and Doxycycline, and this is over the course of a year, and they have not gone on to have an episode of oral or esophageal candidiasis. Now, this is because we're activists, and we're activist lay health workers, that we're putting these things together. If you all would change the definition and put out standards of care, okay, then that would be different. Other people might treat aggressively. We could save a lot of women a lot of trouble. If we could stem it vaginally.
But you mean if they don't have an HIV definition, they're not treated? I mean, every woman who comes to the clinic with vaginal candidiasis,